Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. This is the second night and there are four streams coming up. But the first one is this with the Traditional Britain Group. And I have two representatives from that organisation here, Gregory Lauder-Frost and Andrew Moffat. So welcome to the show, gentlemen. And Gregory, could you introduce the TBG to the audience for those who haven't heard of it before?
Well, the Traditional Britain Group's been going now for 20 years, and we see ourselves as a continuator of the old Conservative Monday Club and the Western Goals Institute. Really, we see ourselves as real radical Tories. We don't see ourselves as some kind of, you know, lunatic fringe. We feel that we want to get back to a traditional Britain. We feel the government and all the political parties have gone off the rails for the last four or five decades, and that we are now living in a state of moral and social anarchy, and we are completely in the wilderness as far as a normal society is concerned. And we see that nobody at Westminster is representing the people anymore. They're just representing themselves. And so the TBG exists to raise awareness of what the government is doing. We have a very good web page on Metapedia, which outlines our aims and our main aims and objectives. And, you know, we're just opposed to things like internationalism, we're opposed to globalism, we're opposed to liberalism, we're opposed to socialism, because all these things are forms of cancer and interference in our society. So we don't really want to know about these things. So we want to make people aware of just what's going on, and so that people can say, yes, we agree, we're with you. And in that respect, of course, the mainstream Conservative Party, for instance, can't stand us. They said, we're extremists. Well, we're not extremists. If it was before 1940, we'd be regarded as normal, everyday Tories.
Yes. An obvious question would be, you listed a number of things that you're opposed to. What would you say that you are for?
Well, we're for a return to normality. we're for a return to things like withdrawal from the United Nations Refugee Charter. We are for a withdrawal of the United Kingdom from NATO, which is just a United States proxy organization, which will eventually end up with us getting nuked on their behalf. And we're opposed to these organizations. So we are for getting out of these things. We are for the government revising the education system so that we don't have red hot Marxists in every single college and university in the country, brainwashing our children. We are for the children being taught about our heritage, our traditions, instead of brainwashing them with Marxist dogma. There are many things we are for. I could sit here probably till midnight telling you all the things we're in favor of, and of course all the things we're against. But obviously, if we're against something, we're for the opposite.
That's of course. I just wanted to. I wondered how you would answer if it was put to you that way. Andrew, would you like to chip in on this in terms of defining the TBG and what it stands for and what it's against?
Yeah, just picking up on what Gregory says. The TBG is very. Very much in favour of traditional values in recent decades, and especially in the last decade. We believe in an independent Britain, and self-determination, law and order, culture, Christianity. And on that point, I might mention that not everyone is a Christian, but in my day, we had compulsory Christian observance. And Christianity provides a central moral compass. So we support Christianity, but we also support the moral compass that it bestows. We believe in civilization. We want to restore a sense of direction to the nation, which has been wiped out because of mass immigration. We want to teach history in the schools. We believe in the nation state. We want to halt immigration. These are some of the things that we want to do. And in the old days, we go back about 60 years ago, most Tories would have believed in that. In fact, most Tories would have believed in that. Most Tory members just 20 years ago. Some Tory members still do. I don't know what they're doing, therefore, in the Conservative Party. The Conservative Party, like the Labour Party, is absolutely jam-packed with social Marxists. And there's not a cigarette paper between the Labour Party and the Conservative Party on social issues. That's the case with all of the parties, and most so with the so-called Scottish Nationalist Party, which isn't a nationalist party at all. It's a tartan bagpipe front organization of destructive, politically correct Marxists.
Yes, and there's a similar thing with Sinn Féin in Ireland. The SNP in Scotland is a very strange. I don't really understand how this happened, except that I think Sinn Féin in Ireland was opposed to the English rule. The SNP in Scotland were opposed to the English rule. And so that, I think, is what defined them. And everything else was sort of up for grabs, or at least it wasn't in the end. But that's my own feeling about that. But it's another topic altogether. You speak.
Yes, the only thing is, Colin, you say, I mean, I'm a Scot the same as you. I was educated in Scotland. I've spent a large part of my life in Scotland. There's no question that there is no English rule of Scotland. We've got British rule. We've always had British rule. You could say, you could put it the other way around. Back in 1974, Harold Wilson won a very small majority of 3. You might remember that. Without the Scottish Labour vote, it would have been a Conservative majority. So you could say it's Scottish rule of England. And that was certainly the case in 1997, when Blair was elected with a large majority comprising almost entirely of Scottish cabinet ministers.
This is a very strange situation. I've just realised, because you're Scottish, I'm Scottish, and Gregory is half Scottish, but we are not typical Scots. I mean, we're not sort of full of resentment towards the English. Quite the opposite, I would say. Gregory, would you like to chime in on this?
Well, it seems to me that the SNP is just a racist party going on and on about the English. The same with, I was completely opposed to devolution. I voted against devolution, and everybody I know voted against devolution. And we've always had full representation at Westminster. There have been members of Parliament from Scotland, from Wales, from Northern Ireland. They've all been in the Westminster Parliament, and the Westminster Parliament governed Great Britain for the whole people, not just a tribe, some in some corner of the country. And I don't see why the SNP, which is quasi-totalitarian, I don't see why they should be governing some little corner of the country. And maybe the Northumbrians not, or the Cornish, or you know, the Yorkshiremen. Why Yorkshire's half as big as Scotland? Why don't they have their own government? Where is this crazy nonsense going to end? And we saw it just this week when some stupid SNP fellow said that the the Scots were going to control the United Kingdom territorial waters that happened to be off the coast of some part of Scotland. This is completely crazy. We either have a United Kingdom or we don't. And I think it's, instead of the government constantly pandering, government after government, constantly pandering to these crazy little groups of people. And we must remember that the SNP gets slightly less than half the vote in Scotland. They're not voting, they're not running Scotland as a party which has the vast majority of Scots behind them. That's a lie. That's untrue. So we need a government that's going to stand up to this and say that devolution and this garbage nonsense that we hear daily is going to come to a grinding halt. And if they want to just tinker away, they can get on with it. But I think the government at Westminster has to stand firm on things like the law and other things. I think we can't continue to go down the road where Scottish laws deviate so drastically from, say, English laws, where we have this the crazy hate speech scenario that's going on at the moment in Scotland. And this has been going on since 2010. This is not new. There's been all kinds of legal legislation in Scotland that probably the majority of the population don't know about.
And you fell foul of it a year ago, didn't you? You might want to talk about
it. I'm afraid so. And I think this is very dangerous because we've reached a situation where people in Scotland actually do not any longer have freedom of speech. And this has been a cornerstone of civilization throughout the civilized world. Free speech. We all talked about Nazis. We all talked about the Soviets and how they did not have freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of thought and opinion. Well, we are going straight down this route in Britain today, particularly in Scotland, where indeed the judiciary are carrying out these disgraceful laws the same way the judiciary in Germany and Russia carried out the new laws of the delightful new people that they had over there. And that's what's wrong, because at the end of the Second World War, everyone said, this must never happen again, this must never happen again. But nobody mentioned the judiciary. And the judiciary continued their roles throughout the war, before the war, throughout the war, and indeed in Russia, they're still there, the same judiciary that was there under the communists. And we have reached a situation in this country where there is no longer any proper accountability, because we've embraced liberalism, which is a form of anarchism. And it means that everyone is doing their own thing. And it's really quite out of control. And I think if people don't sit up and start looking at things, it's all going to wash right over them and there'll be nothing they can do about it.
You've said that you don't think... Could you mute just for a second? Thank you. You've said that you don't believe in devolution for the Scots or the Cornish or the Yorkshire, of course, and so on. And those I've actually heard about, you probably know yourself, about political projects to create parliaments for, like, to separate Cornwall off from England and the same with Yorkshire. I don't know how fantastical those projects are at this stage. But in terms of Scotland, I mean, I voted against independence in 2014, but I'm not sure, because at this point, I'm not sure if that was correct, because I think that something is happening. I don't really understand why it's happening, except, well, Marxist agitation it would be one reason. But I think that the Scots are actually rediscovering their identity in some strange way, that they know that I think there's an increasing number of Scots who no longer are interested in Britain. as an identity, but they are very invested in Scottish as an identity. What would you say about that?
I don't think there's any evidence.
Can I come in?
Just a second. I don't think there's any evidence whatsoever that Scots ever lost their identity or their culture or the 10% or less of Scots that speak Gaelic. There's been no change. There's been no change. Scotland, Scots still wore the kilt. They still had Roman law. And there's been no change. I think this is a myth that's been generated by the SNP.
You might need to unmute. Thank you.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Can I far away?
Yes.
This business that there's a difference between Scotland and England has been carried to an extreme by the SNP, and the SNP is now trying to change history. It's trying to change history in Scottish schools. A big controversy has blown up about that recently from a leading historian in Scotland. I forget his name, but he has directly challenged.
Yeah. Sorry,
and Scotland and England are bound together by blood, and there's no question about that. We share a joint history as a joint nation under Britain. We've established more in terms of global and world civilization than any other nation before us. We have had common sacrifices. We've fought in common battles. We've established the biggest empire in history. Now, that is history, but we are bound by history. We are bound by culture and our joint civilization. We speak the same language. We gave birth to the United States, to Australia, to Canada, to New Zealand. There is a hostility against England in Scotland, and it's being built up by the Scottish Nationalist Party. But the Scottish Nationalist Party is rather similar to the East German Communist Party. Do you remember the East Germans called themselves the Democratic Republic of East Germany? Well, there was nothing democratic about it. There is nothing democratic about the SNP, which is trying to wipe out free speech. But also, it is hardly a nationalist party. It does not want independence. It wants Scotland to become a subservient state to Brussels, to the European Union. Scotland would have to join the European Union, and in so doing, as a new member state, it would have to sign up to the single currency. Now, for those that don't understand, when the Greeks had difficulties with their fiscal and monetary, with their fiscal situation some 10 years ago, the European Commission climbed through every item of expenditure, and that is what would happen under a so-called independent Scotland, where Scotland would have to surrender the supremacy of law to the European Union, to the European Court, and it would have to take the diktats from Brussels. At the same time, it would be cut off from the funding of the British Exchequer, which means that there would be an austerity programme that makes Mrs. Thatcher sound like a spendthrift.
Gregory, would you like to chip in here?
Well, I think Andrew's hit the nail on the head. I think the man in the street in Scotland is misled by the SNP. And I think that the Scots, the average Scot, doesn't understand the economics of the situation. And they don't understand the fact that Scotland has always had, through the Scottish office, full control of its own affairs. They've had their own laws, their own education system, they have their own church. And it's just a lie to suggest that they were somehow under English rule. They had their own members in the Parliament in Westminster, just the same as the people in Yorkshire, just the same as the people in Lancashire, just the same as the people in Northumberland. So why do they think that they're extraordinarily special? I think it's a nonsense. And I think what you were saying earlier about these other tribes in Cornwall and other places, I think they're all off their trolleys as well. And I think what people need to do, they need to get an atlas out and check out how tiny we are. This little tiny island, a tiny little island off the coast of Europe, and all that's coming out of it is a lot of silly caveman tribal fighting and infighting. What does this present to the rest of the world? A disunited country that all they can do is fight amongst themselves. Well, it's wrong, and the government needs to get a bit of gumption and stop it all. And it needs to come to a grinding halt. I think the other thing I'd do just to get to the SNP is to reassess the West Lothian issue and reassess how much money is paid to Scotland as opposed to everybody else in the United Kingdom.
Right. One question that comes up is, because you say that Scotland shouldn't have its own parliament and so on. One last question about the Scottish issue. How different would you say the English and the Scots are in general? Just in general terms, would you say that there is a Scottish character and an English character, an English archetype and a Scottish archetype? What would you, Andrew, would you like to talk about that?
Yes, there's no question about that. There's a Lancastrian character and there's a Yorkshire character. That goes back in history as well to the Wars of the Roses. And there was animosity between those two counties. Yes, in terms of Scotland, Scotland has its own writers, its own poets. I rehearse Burns at Burns Night. Usually I do several because my knowledge of that is in some demand. But these are all things that fit within the provenance of the United Kingdom. I've been around the states. There are huge differences, say, between Alabama and New York, and yet there is a United States of America. We speak the same language. We share the same values. We have a joint history. Now, I don't blame many of the Scots for voting SNP insofar as many think it is a genuine nationalist party, which it is not. And a lot of them have every reason to be fed up with the Conservative Party. And my word, I am as fed up with the Conservative Party as they are. It has continuously resulted in disappointment when elected. It has continuously failed to carry out what it should have carried out. That is independence for Britain, especially more recently. We're still waiting 4 years after the referendum to obtain that independence. But most of all, it has failed dismally on the issue of immigration. In fact, it has conspired to bring in millions of unassimilable elements into this country, which has caused no end of divisiveness, crime, criminality, wage compression, and all of those other things. And that is as much the Conservative Party. In fact, the totality of immigration under the Conservative Party since the war has been even greater than that than under Labour. So I don't blame the Scots. If you keep on deconstructing the institutions of the state, then you will eventually break the state. And both the main parties have been doing that. So it is unsurprising that prestige in being British has diminished. But let me remind you, back in 1982, during the Falklands crisis, it was the shipbuilders in Glasgow who banged the patriotic drum to get those ships out so that they could help our troops, get down to the Falklands and assist in the war effort.
Yes, indeed. Gregory, I'd like your thoughts before we move on to the Conservative Party, which is a necessary next topic. Gregory, would you like to speak about the question that I asked Andrea about the differences, if any, between the Scots and the English, obviously in general terms?
Well, I think the Scots have a genuinely different character. They have a different accent. They rather thrill in the idea of wearing a kilt. It's a national dress. The English don't have a national dress. And so these things set them apart slightly, make them maybe interesting. As Andrea said, they have some brilliant, there's been brilliant minds have come out of Scotland, Baird, numerous other people, Rutherford split the atom. But as Andrew said, we're all one at the end of the day. We live on a tiny island. We have, since the union, we have cooperated fully with each other in every possible way. And, the English like going to Scotland. They like the Scots. And there are far more Scots, people of Scottish descent, living in England than there are today in Scotland. And so I think really we've got to stop this crazy fighting, this crazy nonsense that somehow Scotland is going to be better off independent. There's no significant evidence whatsoever that that is true. And all it will do is shatter the union. And I think we've really got to fight that sort of talk.
Right. Well, on that note, let's move on to the topic of the Conservative Party. So you've both correctly said that Greg, thank you. You've both said that it has facilitated mass immigration, but not just that, though. I mean, other things as well. It was, after all, a Conservative Party that brought in gay marriage. I think that was in 2012 or 2011, David Cameron, which was a surprise. That really came out of nowhere, everywhere at once, in America as well. Suddenly it was essential that we have gay marriage. It hadn't even been meant, like 5 years earlier, less, two years earlier, it hadn't even been on the table. And suddenly it was an essential, and suddenly it was implemented everywhere, which you could say is an aspect of globalism. What I would ask the two of you is, when was the last time that the Conservative Party of Great Britain actually conserved something? You see, it seems to me that I'll ask you, is it even good at economics? Andrew, would you like to take this first?
Well, you've asked me an interesting question. We've got a look at the last show. And hello.
Hi. Could you start again, please? There was a technical problem there.
I think we've got to look back several decades to discover when the Conservative Party last conserved something essentially British, that was culturally British, or that was a part of our heritage. What it has done, it has conserved everything the socialists have done. And despite the return of Conservative governments, they have maintained that legislation. All this panoply of discrimination, anti-discrimination legislation that has undermined free speech and has left the average Briton now not quite knowing what he can say and what he can't say. And these are the most essential elements of freedoms, along with freedom of association. That is no longer available in Britain anymore because it is wrapped up in these anti-discrimination laws. So we've got free speech and freedom of association, the most essential freedoms which the Conservative Party has played its part in extirpating.
Yes. So, okay, Gregory, would you like to chime in on this? When would you say that the Conservative Party had last conserved something? I think social issues in particular. I can't think of anything.
I can't think of anything either. So we're at one on that. I think that from my perspective, the Conservative Party are today a completely liberal party. I think that David Cameron said when the coalition, when he went into coalition with the Liberals, the Lib Dems, he said, the differences between us are cigarette paper thin. Well, I've never heard a more honest statement from a politician. And that was, that's the situation we're in today, that we have the Marxists on one side, the socialists, the Labour people, and we have the Liberals on the other side. And they both aim for deconstruction of a normal society, but for different reasons. The Liberals are only interested in the money. And so we've seen, since Thatcher, this obsession with the balance sheet, with money. And that's all they talk about. Gross national product, making money. That's all we hear from Conservative Party politicians. And as Andrew said, they have failed to oppose the socialist types of laws, the socialist legislation over the years, over the decades. They have not opposed any of the social legislation. In fact, they have ridden with it. So they are as much part of the deconstruction and destruction of normal society as the other two left-wing parties. We are today faced with three major parties at Westminster who are all on the left. If we go back to before the First World War, before Labour ever saw the light of day, so to speak, the Liberal Party were the left. They were the enemy of the Conservatives. And today they're all pals. They're all they're all singing from the same hymn sheet, and they're all deconstructing society. They don't care about the church. They have undermined the monarchy. They have gone along with the socialist class war attacks on the House of Lords. We now have a House of Lords that is infinitely worse and more disgraceful than any House of Lords in history. And it's this Conservative Party that you can hold responsible, because they've not repealed anything, they've not gone back on anything, they haven't changed anything. They attacked every other thing that Labour did over the last 50 years, but what did they do to change it? What did they do to repeal it? The only things they repealed were things to do with the economy. They did not look at the education system. They did not look at the BBC. They did not look at NATO. They did not look at immigration. In fact, the Conservative Party are responsible for as much immigration as Labour. Now we have people coming across a 25-mile strip from France, and this party, this Conservative administration, are completely incapable of turning these people around, even though it's just a short distance. They are incapable, and it's an absolute disgrace, and it's going to change this country for the worse.
Okay. Andrew, you would like to chip in here.
Not only, I'd like to add to what Gregory has said, not only have they failed to stop this flow of migrants, they've actually facilitated it, and that is what they've been doing for the last 50 years, facilitating immigration. Now, let's put this into context. The birth rate in London, say, is such that, in fact, we're already a minority in London, but let's go to some of these other cities. The birth rate of the immigrant descended population is such that it is very often this, that within the lifetime of a child born today, probably by the time that that child reaches middle age, we as a nation will be reduced to minority status in our own ancestral homeland without any consultation or consent whatsoever. Leave alone the consultation of future generations of Britons for whom we are trustees and custodians. It is impossible to consult them, but the Conservative Party would not bother even if it was. And we have a legacy to the fallen and to our ancestors to maintain intact, that wonderful heritage that has been passed down to us. We have nowhere now to go. This is our last line of defense because we have no other homeland. Those people in this nation who are, in my view, merely guests, can always go back to their nations of origin. But we have nowhere else to go except this nation, and we are becoming increasingly dispossessed in our own ancestral homeland, which I repeat again, it is so important, this. If we do not make a stance now, then we have had it, and the nation will cease. London, which was once the heartbeat of the British Empire, has now become the first part of the United Kingdom where a distinctive ethnic group, the Cockneys, have been literally wiped out in their own ancestral homeland. There for over 1,000 years, they no longer exist in most parts of the East End. And that is because of the immigration policies, in particular of the Conservative Party, but also the Labour Party. It is a policy and a strategy to dispossess us, to remove us from our heritage, from our culture, and from our history. And it is still continuing under what many people expected to be a right-wing administration.
Yeah, one of the very annoying things about all of this is that, as you say, people expected this to be a right-wing administration, just as they expected Trump to be this very nationalistic, far-right, racist. This is what the left were saying. And they said the similar things about Boris Johnson. And yet what we've found is that, again, he's not conservative. He maintains the status quo. But yeah, that's not saying much. In fact, you could even say he doesn't maintain the status quo, because all that's the nonsense that's happened this year with COVID. That brings us quite neatly onto Gregory wanted to talk about that and how that has been mishandled this year. I mean, it's a bit of a change of topic, but we may as well go for it. Gregory, what would you like to say about that? Because I know that the rules on YouTube are pretty confusing and strict and arbitrary about what can and can't be said about COVID, but none of us is going to make any medical claims or claim to be a medical authority on this. So just speak about it as a layman, Gregory.
Well, you're absolutely correct. I'm no scientist and I'm no doctor, but I think that this has gone on for long enough, and they were originally building all these makeshift hospitals, saying the whole place is going to come crashing down. We're going to have all these tens of thousands of people overloading the system. We're not going to be able to cope. And that has not happened. And the statistics that the government are releasing are showing that there's a death rate of maybe 1-2% of the population, which is not much higher than the average death rate over a 12-month period for people dying from colds, flus, pneumonia, particularly the older generation. And I think the government have been disingenuous in saying that everybody, you know, that there's 30,000 people have died specifically from COVID. No, that is not the case, I understand. what they're saying is that the death certificate has said COVID symptoms. And that's quite different. That's quite different. A lot of these people have had underlying health conditions, and COVID's been the last straw, or maybe it wasn't even the last straw. They just had COVID symptoms. So I think really the government is now in fantastic national debt. They now owe more money than the whole the last 50 years put together. And we can't go on like that. It means our children are going to have to pay all this national debt back. How are they going to do that? How are they going to pay 50 years of national accumulated in this 1 year? 50 years of national debt accumulated in 1 year. How are my children going to pay this back? And your children, this is not on. The government need to get their act together. If these people are going to go into hospital and they're going to die, well, I think it's like every other disease, like cancer, like anything else. We've got to get back to work. We've got to stop playing around, because it's costing billions of pounds every week. And I think it's time to call it a day. I think they've got to get cracking and start behaving normally again and deal with it as it comes.
Andrew, please go ahead.
Yeah, just further to what Gregory said, just to summarize a few points. The lockdown occurred because of wildly erroneous forecasts from Professor Ferguson. They then used these false statistics to create fear. Gregory's touched on that, but it came because they cancer deaths, for instance, were statistically registered as COVID deaths because people were dying with COVID rather than from COVID. It's rather like being, if you've got flu and also cancer, being registered as dying of flu. There was deliberate fear-mongering going on of Stalinist proportions. And I've seen, and it's available on the internet, the psychological warfare units paper on this, how to get the population to comply, how to instill fear into the population. There's been enormous censorship. Many highly qualified doctors, respiratory experts, and others, such as the ex-head of Pfizer, the respiratory head of Pfizer International, has condemned the government's policy on lockdown. But the big elephant in the room they don't want to discuss is Sweden. There's been no lockdown in Sweden. The deaths per million of the population are considerably less than we have here. And of course, many people say, well, Sweden is a large country, much bigger than us, with a huge land mass and very few people. That is not the point. That's like including the North Sea into our geographical landmass, simply because most people these days live in urban areas. And in terms of the urban density of the population over there, it's very similar to our own. The average age of those dying is 83. For those dying under the age of 60, as I understood it, in October, there were only 307 deaths. And if you look at the long-term average over the last 25 years of yearly deaths, we are now pretty well within our 25-year average, with 7 years with a death rate rather larger than we have at the moment. So there is something in all of this that the eye does not see, and it's been propagated by continuous fear-mongering by the government. And it's going to devastate our economy, as it is beginning now to do, with massive unemployment beginning to bud. Suicides, marital breakups, wife battery, child battery at home, all sorts of other things. Cancer deaths rising because cancer patients can't obtain treatments. This is not being discussed by the mainstream media, which seems to be complicit with the government, and there is not a proper discussion going on amongst medical experts, who have been threatened in the NHS with the sack if they speak out.
Yes, it's all very sinister. I think an obvious question to ask would be, what is actually going on here? Why is this being done? What is happening? Gregory, would you like to give your thoughts on that?
Well, I have no doubt that there was a virus. There's always been viruses. We had the Spanish flu after the First World War. It killed millions. But you can't close a country or countries, plural, down, shut them down, and put people under house arrest for a whole year. And we're heading for that here. This is unacceptable in any free society for any excuse. And I think we've got to now move out of this scenario and get back to normal and deal with people's illnesses as they come up. We can't go on like this. It's not right, and it's going to cause irreparable damage to the country, to the mentalities of the population, and also to the economy. I wonder if we can get back before we close to some of the crucial things about the TBG.
Oh yes, certainly. That was what we were going to end with. So, please tell people about the TBG.
Well, I think first of all, people should know that the TBG was always campaigning to get out of Europe. You know, it wasn't just the UKIP. You know, when the Conservative Party didn't want to get out of Europe and nobody else at Westminster wanted to get out of Europe, we were campaigning to get out of Europe. And I think the thing I must say is that we are so totally opposed to mass alien immigration from other parts of the world because we believe in Britain and in the indigenous people, their heritage, their customs, and a recognizable British identity. I can't think of any other country in the third world that does not believe in these things, and there is no reason that we should not believe in these things. And I think the government, the Conservative Party, the fake Conservative Party, said in their 1970 general election manifesto that they were going to halt mass immigration and they were going to encourage people to return to their natural homelands and they were going to set up an agency, a government agency, to facilitate that so that people could come along and say, well, you know, actually, I would like to go back home. And I think this is needed now, today, more than ever before. We must have a facility to encourage people to return to their natural homelands. Because as the Dalai Lama said last summer, he said in summer 2019, he said, Europe should be for the Europeans. I didn't hear anybody calling His Holiness a raving, screaming, racist, far-right lunatic. And he is right. He's right, because here is a man who is in exile from his country, which has been taken over by another country and settled to a great extent by people who are not Tibetans. And he sees what is happening in Europe as completely wrong. And he is absolutely right, because we do not believe at the TBG that assimilation is possible. We believe that it's some kind of liberal wet dream. And it's just not going to, is not going to happen. And, you know, we see increased crime statistics largely against our own people. This is completely unacceptable to us at the TBG, completely and absolutely unacceptable. And if we don't do something about this unassimilable alien population in the country, we're in for a lot of trouble. We have to work out schemes and plans to encourage people to return to their natural homelands. And one way of doing this is to say that people can't have any state benefits of any description until they've worked in Great Britain for at least 5 years. I'm afraid that would stop a lot of it. And, of course, they've got to turn all of these illegal immigrants around in their tracks. And I think that the other thing we've got to do, we've got to get out of the 1951 UN Refugee Convention, which is out of date and unworkable. And we've got to do this. And if the government can't see that, then there's something wrong with the people in the government. If they're obviously not intelligent enough to see something that's staring them in the face. The other thing I want to say is that we believe that the heterosexual family unit is the fundamental family unit of society. It has been in just about all societies on the earth for the last 5,000-10,000 years. And we think it's a scandal that the Conservative Party have gone out of their way to destroy this family unit. And we would be in favor of repealing Cameron's legislation. We see that in Hungary, they have made it against the law for homosexuals to marry. And today we hear that they have also passed legislation saying that it's completely impossible for same-sex couples to adopt children. Now, here is a good Christian country, European country. They're doing the right thing. They're doing the sort of conservative thing that we should have been able to expect from a conservative party. And, you know, we're in a very bad way in this country because we are going down Marxist and chronic liberal libertarian routes that are destroying the fabric of society. We've got to keep making people aware of this, and we've got to do all that we can to reverse it.
All right. Andrew, please take it away.
Just to say, Colin, I'm slightly changing the thing, the topic. I'm wary that the time's moving on. Did you want to ask any questions from some of your viewers? You did mention that at the beginning, so there may be one or two that have come in.
There were a few during the live chat, but I can't track them down now. People should be leaving questions on entropy. There are also free questions there as well. That's possible too. But there haven't been any for this stream, so I'm sorry about that. But I think that you are, the two of you are very popular, and I would suggest that perhaps you should do these kinds of streams yourselves, because I think that there would be an audience for them. I think that people would love to speak to you directly. I have a feeling about that. So you might want to look into that. Of course, there is a Traditional Britain Group channel on YouTube, and I think that'll be linked from the website, which is linked below, so people can find that easily. But are there any, just before we finish, are there any final words that you'd like to add to this? Andrew first.
Yes, just going back on that coronavirus issue, and it's a vast topic, it keeps changing, and it's quite a struggle to keep up with it all. I've noticed, as have many people, that the censorship isn't just YouTube, but it's extended across to Twitter and to Facebook too. And Facebook is carrying out a remarkable degree of censorship on all sorts of topics now. We've got a sort of global social media, which has come under the authority of globalist institutions and globalist interests, and they are no friends of ours. So it's pleasing to see that there is an alternative social media mushrooming, including BitChute. I think there's another one, Real YouTube. Now, I haven't used any of these myself, but I have seen them. So I think in a way, the internet is becoming dangerous for the establishment. They've tried to take control of it, but it's rather like Alan Ramsay's Book of Scottish Proverbs, the mare you tread on a tart, the braider it grows. So you tread on it in one part, and then it pushes up in another part. And this is the trouble they're having with the media. They can't control it. So we've still got very much to play for. I think we can turn the situation around, but it means that all of those people who have not yet stood up to be counted, they've got to come in and join organizations such as the Traditional Britain Group and start campaigning, or at least start attending so that we can all meet each other and we can be amongst and in our own company to discuss the sort of issues that we need to promulgate to get our country back, and not just our country, but our civilization too.
Yes, indeed. Gregory, any last words from you?
Well, I think that there are just so many issues that we haven't covered.
I know. I mean, we can go on. I don't mind.
But I think there are a lot of people out there that simply don't know what to do, that talk about the things we're talking about around the dinner table and are completely annoyed and fed up with all the things that the governments have done over the last few decades, and feel helpless. They feel helpless. They also feel helpless under the current electoral system, which is rigged so that it's archaic, and it's rigged so that there's no chance of any new parties ever getting into Westminster. And we saw this with the UKIP when they had nearly 4 million votes and they got one MP. That just can't be democracy. And so there's got to be so many changes, and people need to be aware of what's going on. And they've also got to be aware that there's other people out there like them, and that they're not alone, and that they can join organizations like the Traditional Britain Group, where they're going to meet ordinary, decent, not raving neo-Nazis or fanatics or far-right lunatics, ordinary, decent people who believe in a normal society, the kind of society that we had for generations, for centuries, and which is being trashed in the space of 50 or 60 years by the liberal left at Westminster.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's leave it at that. And I'm very happy that we were able to arrange this. And I think it would be good. I know that Gregory and I tried to do this back in 2016, believe it or not. That was the second millennial, but it was the first one that had this sort of interview format. And the TVG was a priority for me then, and we tried to do it, but it didn't work because of technical reasons. But I'm very glad that we've been able to do this now, and I'll certainly invite you on again next year. In the meantime, is there anything that the Traditional Britain Group has planned or for the next, you know, for the next year or so, the next few months, or is COVID just thwarting all of that just now?
Well, as you know, COVID has completely destroyed everything in 2020. So we are planning, we are going to do a turn things around, hopefully in 2021, and we're hoping to hold another one of our great conferences in May. We're just watching how things are going at the moment with the COVID nonsense. But that's what we're looking forward to. We're looking forward to a conference in May. So everybody can come to that.
I hope they do. Excellent. Well, thank you very much. So that was Gregory Lauder-Frost and Andrew Moffat of the Traditional Britain Group. This is a very enjoyable stream. And as you said, Gregory, there are so many things that we didn't address at all, so many things that we could have gone more into. So I hope that we do get to speak again. In the meantime, please subscribe to the Traditional Britain Group's YouTube channel and follow them on their various social media platforms. Okay, I'll be back in an hour. Let me just see who's... I don't know if it's going to happen or not because he hasn't been responding to me, but hopefully I'll be back in an hour with Count Dankula. If not, then I'll just do an AME. But in the meantime, thank you, Gregory Lauder-Frost and Andrew Moffat, and thank you to everyone for watching. I'll see you soon. Good night for now.
Thank you very much, Colin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much.
Excellent.